Welcome to this special edition of the New Stack Makers on the Road. We're here at the Open Source Summit in Austin, Texas. Discussions from the show floor with technologists giving you their expertise and insights to help you with your everyday work.
Howdy, we're deep in the heart of Austin, Texas, and here at the Open Source Summit, and I'm here to talk about the open source security study done by Linux Foundation, OpenSSF, and Sneak. And I'm going to introduce you to our guests right now. This is a part of On the Road, the On the Road series for TNS makers, and I'm going to introduce you to our guests. Steve, you want to go first?
Sure, yeah, I'm Steve Hendrick. I'm Vice President of Research for the Linux Foundation.
And I'm Matt Jarvis. I'm Director of Developer Relations at Sneak.
Okay, excellent. So we're going to dive right into port was released this week.
Yeah, it was yesterday.
So can you tell us sort of like what is the headline? What is the overall state of open source security?
This was a survey we did at the request of OpenSSF. And the intent of the survey was really to understand, you know, how organizations are doing on their security journey, software security journey, with a just very specific focus on open source software. So we had a couple of objectives with the survey. One was to find out, you know, where organizations are today. Are they struggling? You know, how well are they doing? A second aspect was to really understand more about where they want to go, you know, what's important to them to solve the security problem. And then there was a third part of it, which was actually talking to core contributors and maintainers about what kinds of best practices they were following. And we haven't published that piece of it yet. That's coming in the third quarter of this year. But it was really, from a today standpoint, it's really all about the problems they're having, how bad are the problems, and what are they doing to fix the problems.
And how bad are the problems?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. The reality is I was a little disappointed by the results that I saw, quite honestly. The first sort of straight up question we asked, really kind of a yes or no question, was, do you have an open source software policy? Now, you would think that's an easy question for people to say yes to, because 98% of organizations are using open source, so they're all familiar with it. Most organizations, you know, have a developer community, because if you're not doing software these days, you're going to be out of business. So every company is a software company. What happened was that overall, 49% of organizations said they had a software policy for open source. 34% said they did not, and 17% didn't know how to answer the question or decided not to answer the question. So if you prorate those organizations, those statistics, by taking out the don't know, not sures, you end up with about a 60-40 split. Now, I wanted to dig a little deeper into this because I was concerned, like, okay, so is there a particular segment that's, you know, the source of the problem here? So the first thing I did was to segment by enterprise size class. You know, it was 1 to 500 employees. I think it was 500 to maybe 1,500 or 2,000, and then more than 2,000. So I got, you know, SMB, midsize, and large organizations. And what we found was that it was the small organizations that were distorting the statistics. They're the ones who are having the most problems. More of those companies did not have an open source software policy than did have one. But what was really unfortunate, I think, was that when you look at medium and large size organizations, about 30% of that community does not have an open source software policy. So, you know, if you're a big organization with 20,000 people, you don't have an open source policy. That seems crazy.
So it definitely is something at the enterprise level.
I mean, as I said, only 30% of the large organizations don't have an open source software policy. But when I think about large organizations, they all have CISOs, they have OSPOs, they have governance, GRC. Mm-hmm. How it can be that they don't have an open source software policy in this day and age is a little surprising.
Yeah.
So that was one indicator of the fact that we have a problem these days when it comes to security.
What are some of the other things that you found in the study that you think set off some alarm bells?
I mean, I think that the time to fix across all ecosystems was surprising. You know, that's been growing over the last few years. You can slice the data in lots of ways, particularly when you look at it in aggregate across all ecosystems. And, you know, clearly we're producing a lot more software these days, but we're not actually getting any better, really. really at, you know, making a software more secure. You know, when we look at that data from Sneak, we're obviously looking at applications that people have scanned using our system across all ecosystems. That number is, you know, fairly large. And, you know, I think the other interesting thing from those numbers was the difference between ecosystems, I think, right, Steve? You know, we see particularly in, I think .NET was the one that's got the longest time to fix out of all of the ecosystems. And, you know, whilst it's not easy to put a definitive answer to why that might be different between different programming ecosystems, I think, you know, it probably says something about the development patterns within those particular ecosystems.
And the time to fix has doubled?
Yeah, I think since we started measuring that back in 2018, and as I say, that's aggregated across all ecosystems, across all projects. So, you know, there are different things at play within that data. But, you know, the big takeaway from that is we're not getting any better at fixing those things.
And the exact finding was it's 100 and an average of 110 days? Is that?
I think across all ecosystems. Yeah.
To fix a vulnerability.
In the report, I think it was 98 days.
98 days. Yeah. Okay, so yeah. 98. But that's still a lot, especially, yeah, if you've got a major vulnerability.
Well, to qualify that includes, you know, all sort of problems.
Yeah.
And there are far more, you know, low-level problems than they are critical problems.
Yeah.
And so, and I would assume the critical problems get fixed very quickly, mm-hmm. but many of the lower priority problems could take quite a long time to be fixed.
So not all vulnerabilities are alike, and that some are high urgency and some are not.
Exactly. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people who have misunderstandings about solving vulnerabilities in that, you know, having a kind of zero vulnerability target is probably unrealistic, right? Because not all vulnerabilities are treated equal. You know, some things may have other risk mitigations that mean that they're not vulnerable in your environment. So, yeah, zero is probably not a good goal to have in terms of fixing things, but critical things, you know, is a it should be a target for most people.
One thing that I found is I believe it was 73% of organizations said that they are looking for best practices for open source software. What do you take from that, and what do you think are some of the places they should be looking?
Well, we actually asked about best practices in a variety of places. The 73% was, the context of that question was, what do you think that industry organizations, essentially like the Linux Foundation, should do to help, you know, support, you know, improvements to where we are with security? And that was the 73%. That was the number one response, was best practices. There was another question that I think was actually a better question, which said, what activities are you engaged in to help improve your software security profile or posture? Mm. The leading response there at, I think it was 62%, and this was a multiple response question, was use of more intelligent security-focused tools. So what that says to me was that organizations who care about security are doing some activities to help sort the problem out themselves, because remember, they own their own CI/CD pipeline. And so there's a lot from a process standpoint that they are responsible for. But they were very quick to jump on the bandwagon and say, we want the vendor community to do a better job at providing us tools that makes our life a lot easier. Because I think everybody recognizes that solving the security problem is going to require a lot more effort than we're putting into it today. And therefore, you know, I think the organizations are looking for, in light of the increased workload this represents, they're looking for more efficiency and productivity to help, you know, counterbalance some of the added work that's going to have to go on.
You look like you wanted to add something to that, Matt?
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, one thing that I think comes out very strongly from a lot of these responses is that, you know, we've kind of got a sort of two-pronged problem here, in the sense that, you know, the open source supply chain has clearly become a target for attackers. You know, open source is kind of a victim of its own success, if you like. You know, the ubiquity has meant that a lot of bad actors are realizing that's an easier way to attack things than looking for zero-day vulnerabilities and application code. So on the one hand, we've got that problem happening. And on the flip side, we've got the fact that all organizations need to change the way they do security in the era of modern application development, because the era of CI/CD, things moving very fast, the sort of old days of security being a gatekeeper function is no longer sufficient when we have super fast development processes and applications that are made up of large chunks of open source libraries and very small chunks of homegrown code.
And also, Steve, can you tell us a little bit about what the Linux Foundation is doing around this?
Sure. Well, we have invested pretty heavily in building out program and certification around best practices. Mm-hmm. What I needed to add to the question you had earlier, where I mentioned that vendor tooling, you know, more intelligent vendor tooling was the number one response at 62%. Right behind that at 59% were best practices. So the Linux Foundation has already invested, you know, many, many person years of effort in understanding what those best practices should be. And we've codified all of that. We have a program around it. There's about 150 of them in total. And those now exist. The actual training for those is free. And as is the certification, which I think lasts for 2 years if you pass the exam, the course is about 18 hours long. So it's a very serious commitment. But at the same time, I think, you know, anybody that hasn't gone through a program like that probably should think very seriously about doing so. It will be immensely useful from the standpoint of understanding how to do secure software development.
Obviously, there's a lot of talk about the shortage of cybersecurity skills. And I mean, obviously, Linux Foundation has its credentials training. How do you feel like organizations themselves can be?
Well, I mean, I think it starts from the top inside of organizations. Obviously, having a CISO, having an OSPO are kind of prerequisites to being able to make some real progress on security. I have seen instances of it being left up to the developer community inside of an organization. That could potentially work if you're a small organization. But realistically, I think organizations need to take the whole security issue much more seriously than they are today. And that's going to require a lot of heavy lifting on their behalf.
You know, that imbalance in terms of the number of developers in the world versus the number of security professionals in the world is one of the factors that feeds into this change to the developer-first security model, where, you know, we kind of embed security into the application development lifecycle, you know, giving developers access to tools that give them actionable insights right where they're working. And, you know, we see this kind of transition of the role of security professionals from this kind of traditional gatekeeper role into, you know, this more of the providers of the paved road for developers, you know, toolsmiths and trusted advisors, as opposed to that gatekeeper role where, you know, then we can empower developers to continue to deliver, you know, features at velocity, at scale, which is what everybody needs to do.
Yeah, from the standpoint of pragmatically, some of the most important things that organizations can do today, one is to look very closely at the portfolio of tools that they're currently using to address software security. And based on the study, about 2.4 tool categories were in use. Now, overall, there's about 10 categories, but there are clearly four or five that are really important. So one of the things that becomes pretty obvious at this point is that organizations should probably, if you haven't already, invested in SCA and SAST and DAST and infrastructure as code. Those are great starting points because all of those can do wonders from the standpoint of helping you with your security issues.
I mean, one of the other interesting points for me in the report was even when people did have an open source policy, there was still a very high sentiment of concern about indirect dependencies from, and I think there's still a fundamental misunderstanding from a lot of people about, you know, how that works in open source code, that if you put in, you know, you declare a dependency, that dependency may be bringing in, you know, 100 other dependencies depending on which ecosystem you're working in, and I think that sort of unknown bit is worrying to people even when they have got security controls in place.
Yeah, one of the best ways to deal with the whole issue of direct dependencies and transitive ones, which are dependencies of dependencies, is to get on the SBOM bandwagon, because that's going to give you great understanding of the components. It's going to give you usability. It's going to give you trust. You're going to be able to know, you know, that The components are non-falsified. And so that's all absolutely key from the standpoint of being able to deal with the whole componentization issue that is going on everywhere today.
So absolutely, the SBOM, the Software Bill of Materials, for those who aren't familiar yet. But when we've written about that a lot on the NewStack site, so do a search for SBOM, S-B-O-M. Lots of stuff will come up. Thank you very much, Steve and Matt, for joining me today.
And
this has been an episode of our On the Road series for the NewStack Makers, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe on Simplecast to listen to more episodes on the NewStack Makers. Create and share your favorite audiogram using our Simplecast player. For more articles and great stories, go to thenewstack.io.